Hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. The rollout of Bus Vannan's dial-a-ride minibus service in the north of the island has caused a stir in Jerby, where residents are unhappy with the loss of regular timetabled services, and it's caused a taxi driver to leave Kirkmichael due to what he claims is unfair competition. And in the rest of the programme, the Cabinet Office wants to extend the investigative powers of the Tynwald Ombudsman to cover local authorities and statutory boards. Jerby residents claim the rollout of government's dial-a-ride service is isolating the community and want to see the return of regular timetabled buses in the village. That's according to those who attended a public meeting last week to give local politicians feedback on the demand-responsive transport. It was launched in April to replace the scheduled buses at off-peak times as part of Bus Vannan's Connect Villages service for communities in the north. These people at the meeting were not impressed with how this new system of transport was operating.
It's isolating our community in the fact that now, instead of being able to impulsively take my grandson out, I have to plan a week or a day or 3 or 4 days in advance, and if the weather's bad, you've got a day out with nowhere to go. Also, it is being used as Ramsey Skipper, not for Jerby, Andreas and Bride like we were told it would be. It's nothing like the service we were told.
Would you want it to be changed to make it better, or do you just want to go back to how things were with the older buses?
I'd rather go back to the old service, even if it was every 2 hours, not every hour. These minibuses are so cramped inside. If you get on with two bags of shopping, you've got nowhere to put it because there's no room by your feet. The seats are literally smaller than these orange ones that you can see, so you're all squashed in. So if this bus is full, you've got nowhere to put anything. And for the elderly to get on and off, it's ridiculous because they're little metal steps. Bring back our old buses, but every 2 hours even.
Can I just ask you what you think about the bus service?
It's, you really want to know?
Yeah.
I really do.
it's not working for us at all. Like we said in the meeting, the kids have been isolated all summer because they can't hop into town on the bus to see the mates. By the same token, the mates can't hop on the bus to come out to see them. So they've been sat in front of an Xbox all summer because they can't, they're stuck in the village.
And if it ain't broke, why do something about it? We all pay rates.
We all pay tax.
We all pay tax.
So would you support it being changed to make it better for you, or do you want to just go back to the old buses?
The old system. At least we knew where we were with that.
Either that, or stick with a scheduled bus service that serves the villages on a roundabout run. Andreas Bride, here, and back at Ramsey. Do it on the hour, every hour. Everybody knows about that.
Have they helped you since they brought them in?
No, they've been absolutely rubbish. I tried to get one, I have splints, I have a walking frame, I have a mobility scooter. You can't take the mobility scooter on the bus, on the regular service anyways. But being told that I had to walk to the shop, which is about a 10-minute walk, on a walking frame and splints, ain't going to happen. So basically I told them where they could shove their bus without being rude.
So it has made your life not easier then, basically?
No, luckily I do drive, but if my legs are bad, I can't drive, so I can't get a bus because they won't pick you up outside your door. It's supposed to be a door-to-door service, and it isn't. The children in May had to have their exams. My friend had a son who was doing his GCSEs. He could not get a bus. They would not provide a bus. They provide a bus at 9 o'clock in the morning, and his exam was not till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so therefore it cost his mum money to send them out to Ramsey all day long and then go and sit an exam where it should be knackered, or get a parent to try and take their child into Ramsey for their exam. It's just ridiculous.
The meeting was arranged by Aaron Michael, MHK's Alfred Cannon and Tim Baker, who'll be taking these views back to the Department of Infrastructure in the hope of finding a solution. Mr Baker told me it was plain residents weren't happy with dial-a-ride buses.
So yeah, a very clear view from constituents that it's not working to their satisfaction. I think there's probably a couple of elements there. One is that it's a different service from what they've been used to, but clearly the service isn't panning out the way that it was originally expected to, and there are a number of operational issues that certainly need addressing. And we did hear a small number of people who had some very positive things to say about the service, but on balance, the overriding sentiment was that for the people of Derby generally, they preferred the more scheduled services that make it easier for them to plan and more predictability around where they arrive and when they arrive. And so, of course, as constituency MHKs, Alf and I have to take that back and talk to the department and work out how we move forward.
Well, when you asked for a show of hands for the three options, the first being continuing the service, the second being changing the service to meet the concerns that have been raised, and the third to go back to how it used to be, I don't think anyone voted for anything other than go back to how it used to be. So is that the message you're going to try and take to the department?
We do need to take that message that we need to have a much more of a schedule-based solution for people. I think that we shouldn't throw out the concept of demand-responsive transport, because clearly it is working in some parts of the island. Certainly other constituents in other parts of Erin Michael are actually very positive about it, but clearly it isn't working for the people of Derby. And I think what my take on it is that the journeys that are made in Derby are more journeys of necessity. We heard very much about people taking journeys to and from work by bus, doctor's appointments, connecting to other services to take them elsewhere on the island. And those are journeys that actually often may not be so easy to plan in advance. And also, it may not be easy to accommodate slippages in arrival times, for instance. I mean, clearly, if you need to be at work or get home from work, that you've got fixed schedules to work to. So I think the service needs to reflect the needs of the population that are using it.
But as a responsive service, with responsive being really highlighted in all the PR around this, shouldn't that be how it works and meet people's demands, however irregular they are?
Well, the service does need to meet people's demands. It's like any service. It's to get satisfied customers, you have to meet their needs. But to do that, you have to clearly understand the needs. And it's clear from the conversation tonight that the needs here are different from other areas where demand-responsive transport has been rolled out. So what we're hearing is that in the Derby context, as it is now, it isn't working, and we need to do something about that. As constituency MHKs, we need to clearly feed that back. It was very helpful to have Bus Van in here to listen and to get that feedback direct. We'd ask them to be in listening mode only and not try and speak and defend the service. And because it was a constituency meeting to hear the voice of the people, and Alf and I have very, very clearly heard that.
It's been said, I believe, by Mr Cannon in one of his Save Initiative speeches in recent budgets, that money needs to be saved, and integrated transport is a way of doing that. I believe it was 1 million roughly estimated over the entire of that integrated transport. So if you scrap this, will you have to end up going back on those savings and potentially spending more again?
Well, there's two different ways, aren't there, of improving the financial performance of a service or of a business. One is by cutting costs, the second is by building revenues. Now, I think the bus service on the Isle of Man is one of its hidden assets and a real jewel in the crown. And I think when you link it to the climate change agenda, that actually the bus service needs to be further developed. So for me, it's about making the service more well used by people and actually trying to grow the revenue rather than trying to cut the costs. And I think there is an opportunity, particularly with Professor Curran's work, to really think a bit more creatively now about this and actually to reflect on what we've heard today and to acknowledge that we need to do things differently, because it's about connecting people, it's about inclusivity, it's about opening up opportunities for people, and it's really important that Derby gets the service that it needs. We're stood here looking at the site where investment is going to be going in from the Department of Infrastructure in both creating new jobs and developing the residential areas. And clearly, to do that, we need to provide in the right services so that people want to live here and they can get here. So to do that, we need to think differently.
But the cynical amongst the residents suggested this is about cost and Derby is the first to go when it comes to services.
There was that sense, and I think unfortunately there's some history around this area where people of Derby haven't been well served in the past by some of the government's decisions, and there is a feeling of disenfranchisement and that Derby has had the rough end of the stick. And as the constituency MHK, I'm committed to trying to address that. There are some really good things going on in Derby, and it's about building this community. So unfortunately, it takes time to change perceptions, but the commitment is there. We absolutely have to and will do put forward the voices of the people here, and I'm sure that Bus Van In will be very receptive to that, and we look forward to taking those conversations further over the next days and weeks to really deliver on what we've heard tonight.
Erin Michael, MHK, Tim Baker. Well, a taxi driver says he's been forced out of business in the north of the island by the Dial-A-Ride minibuses. Busfanen rolled out the Connect Villages and Ports services last December to replace, as we heard, timetable buses and provide links to Ronald's Way. Barry Murphy says due to this government competition, it's no longer financially viable for him to provide his private hire pickups in Kirkmichael. He told me he feels unfairly pushed out of the village.
I've been running the service for approximately 4 years, and it has been primarily a daytime service only. And I decided I would give it plenty of time to see if I could get the business off the ground. Certainly in the early days, it did get off the ground. It got off the ground quite well. As you can well imagine, in Kirkmichael, there's a limited population there. But in fairness, it took off quite good. You know, we had, I had quite a few local runs to do, and that was also backed up by airport runs and Douglas runs and Ramsey runs and other sort of runs. But what's become abundantly clear over the last 12 months is that there's very few long runs now. There's certainly airport runs. They have diminished. And put simply, I cannot really be sitting around my house in Kirkmichael in the daytime waiting for the phone to ring for somebody who wants to go any sort of a reasonable distance. So what I'm saying in effect is I get quite a lot of little runs around there, maybe £3, £4 runs, £5 runs, but I can't continue to run a business on the basis of that. I need to get the longer runs, and I ain't getting them anymore.
So what's affected the longer runs? Why are they no longer seemingly in demand?
I blame two things really, and they're linked. They're linked to the DOI, Busfanen. I blame them primarily for just about every single problem that I'm having right now at work. But there's two different types of services that are coming out of Kirkmichael and the north. One is the Connect Ports, which is the service which at the minute is connecting up to the airport, because that was rolled out from Kirkmichael area and the north approximately 9-10 months ago. And the other one is the Connect Villages service, which would be sort of north of Balaff, if you like, and runs that would be going in towards the Ramsey area. Could be something going from Kirkmichael in around to Balaff area, Sulby area, or wherever, and north of that, and eventually back to Ramsey. So what's become abundantly clear to me is that my purpose up there now seems to be purely and simply runs that are only for £5-6 a go. And the truth is, there simply isn't enough of £5-6 runs in the north of the island for me to sit around all day waiting for the phone to ring. So unfortunately, I have to terminate the business on that basis.
So you feel you've been pushed out by the offer of Connect Ports and Connect Villages. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
With that in mind, were you consulted when those two things were pushed out by the government as a private business owner?
I was one of the original objectors to these applications, because I was very aware when these applications came to the RTLC probably 16 months ago now, that they were going to affect Kirkmichael area first. Kirkmichael area was the main area, Kirkmichael, Balaff and anything north of that, Jerby, Balaff Curras, Andreas area. So, you know, I did get involved. I was an objector, and I took my place at the objector table, and I made it clear that this to me was a taxi service. Busfanen were operating a taxi service. It was not a regular service like they were calling it. It was a service that has to be booked a day before, a couple of days before. It picks people up at their front door, and it drops people off where they want to go. That's not a regular bus service, in my opinion. That's a taxi service. And that's what I was trying to do in the north, albeit as a private hire service. But the two licenses were granted. One was for the Connect Port service, and the other one was for the Connect Villages services. And they were granted for 1 year. And they've been running almost 1 year now. And 1 year, when you're sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring for bookings, is a long time. And the problem that I have, I don't know whether or not these services are going to be renewed, whether or not these licenses are going to be renewed. At the end of the day, it's the government. And, you know, from my experience, the government tends to get what the government wants. So it's unfortunate. And I apologize to any of my customers up there that are going to be affected by this. But, you know, I have got a wife and two kids to feed. And I just simply cannot sit at home waiting for the phone to ring when I know for a fact that Busfanen are busy up there bringing people all over the island, if you like.
Aren't customers always going to choose the best option for them, though? And I suppose Busfanen are offering that, and that's maybe what they'll choose over your own services.
You make such a good point, a very important point. You see, in life, we have to have a function. You know, I have to have a function the same as you have to have a function. We need to feel that whatever we're doing on a daily basis is worthwhile to both to ourselves and to society. And in my opinion, the DOI have taken away my function, not just my function, I mean, I am one of the first people to be affected by all of this because of where I live and because of where I'm based. But eventually this is going to get rolled out island-wide. And I've got in front of me here ADNN 500, which clearly shows that the DOI intend to apply for another 42 operating centres. They've already applied for another 42 operating centres island-wide. And the numbers of minibuses seem to be increasing, gone up to 90 minibuses. So clearly this Dial-A-Ride dream is going to expand. But going back to the purpose, my purpose is not simply to be in Kurt Michael waiting for the phone to ring to be bringing people around for £3 or £4. For any business to function, it needs to make profit. And of course, I have no problem with people using whatever service they wish to use. Of course, I don't. That's freedom of choice. But I'm going to say this, Ewan, and I mean this. I don't believe the service to be in compliance with Section 25 of the Royal Transport Act. That's what I honestly believe. And I don't believe the RTLC should ever have licensed the service. So therefore, I don't believe the consumer should ever have been given the choice in the first place. But on the basis that they have, and on the basis that I believe there's been a wrongdoing done, I have to withdraw my services. I cannot be the person who just does £3 and £4 runs around Kurt Michael anymore. I can't. I can't afford to do that. So I'm going to have to move my operations primarily to Douglas now. That's where I'm going to be. And it's not to say that, you know, if somebody needs my services and I can help out in Kurt Michael, look, I'm a man of the village. I've been living up there for a long time. I'm not completely turning my eye on a situation. But as far as advertising for business and making promises to try to help in every way I can, I can't do that anymore, I'm afraid.
Doesn't this boil down to whether you think the Dial-A-Ride service is, as you said, private hire or a replacement for what would have been regular scheduled buses? Because I'm sure the department would argue is we're just replacing one service with another, albeit a slightly different one, and the way you use it is different, but it's the same service we would have been offering with scheduled buses anyway.
No, it's a massive difference. There's a huge difference, because I don't want to get too technical on this, but we're coming down to Section 25 of the Royal Transport Act, and the DOI are familiar with Section 25 of the Royal Transport Act, as indeed are the RTLC, Royal Transport Licensing Committee. Taxis and private hire come under a totally different section of the Act. Regular bus services are supposed to go on regular routes. And if they need to take a diversion around a roadblock or a diversion, whatever they need to do, that's what they have to do. But they're supposed to start at A and they're supposed to finish at B. They're not supposed to be driving around the countryside picking people up at their front door and loading bags into their boots of minibuses. That's not what they're supposed to be doing. Personally, if it was a straightforward private hire service, I may not have had such a huge issue with it. But you know what? It also comes down to unfair competition. You see, I've got a gripe here. My money, my taxpayers' money, is being used by the DOI to compete in business against me. But the difference is, we're all controlled under the same piece of legislation. They're expected to make a loss. I'm expected to make a profit. The two don't work. They don't work.
Well, responding to the concerns of both the Jerby residents and Mr. Murphy, the Department of Infrastructure has issued a statement in which it says Connect Villages is not intended to compete with taxi companies, which offer a service with no limitations on times, route availability or geographical boundaries. It goes on to say the service is part of an integrated transport strategy designed by the department, supposed to save up to £1 million. Well, according to the DOI, many scheduled buses run well below capacity on rural routes, and the minibus system is a cost-effective, customer-focused alternative. The department makes clear that all feedback on this issue will be taken into account as part of an ongoing review of the service. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The Cabinet Office wants to extend the investigative powers of the Tynwald Ombudsman to cover local authorities and statutory boards. The role was established to investigate complaints from the public against government departments. Well, a consultation is now being held with all the bodies set to be affected by the change to gauge support for broadening the scope of the Ombudsman's role. Well, Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas discussed this possible extension of the investigative powers with me.
2015-16, there was actually a Tynwald report which said that the local authorities are the ones who needed the Ombudsman. If you make a complaint about a local authority, there's no way you can go afterwards. So it's been Tynwald policy to extend the Ombudsman. That was in my mind when I started the process. We started it where it was easiest, which is on government departments. We've had experience now for nearly 2 years, because that came in January 2018. Now is the right time to actually make sure we've got the budget, the arrangements, the law in place so that we can extend it, and we've laid down a timetable. We've asked some questions and looking forward to doing that next year.
Local authorities, what do you think their reaction will be to this? Because usually there is a bit of resistance you get when government tries to do any kind of oversight or anything like that. Do you think they might be suspicious of the intentions of this move?
Well, in 2011, the law was written to include local authorities, also the housing authorities associated with local authorities as well. So it's always been the political intention. Some issues have arisen over the years. We had the Onchan squash courts, we had some planning decisions, and the Ombudsman for Local Authorities was mentioned in both of those contexts. I think it's right from my point of view. I think the public will think it's right, and I'm very interested to see what local authorities make of it. There will be costs. Somebody's got to bear those costs. Yes, the independent ombudsman could make recommendations that local authorities might not like hearing, but that's why you have an ombudsman, to help public processes, delivering services, administration efficiency and everything like that.
So do you expect local authorities to have to put additional resource behind what might come from having that oversight, for that investigative powers from the ombudsman?
Well, we've got two parts. The first part is we've got to actually have a process set up to make sure that the complaints procedure's in place. And perhaps not all local authorities are completely happy with their complaints procedures. Perhaps their ratepayers are not happy with the complaints procedures, but that's something that will come out once we have an ombudsman. Mm. And the second cost is what happens, who pays for the ombudsman's investigation. That needs to be resolved. And I guess the third cost even would be, if the ombudsman identifies things that need to change, who's going to pay for those changes? And obviously it'll have to be ratepayers.
The consultation itself, it only has one question. Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think that's good enough for a consultation? Do you think maps should have been a bit more investigation of some of the issues that might arise from having this?
Well, this is a statutory consultation. We have to consult those affected by the change in the law. Yeah, we thought about laying down ground rules, guidelines for the responses, but we decided it wasn't necessary because Douglas Borough Council, Santon commissioners, Ramsey town commissioners, they're all going to have views about the ombudsman service, and we want to hear all of those views. It's a statutory consultation. Let's see what happens in the first round over the summer, 8 weeks open, and then we'll be in a better place to come back, I hope, to Tim Wood in the autumn to announce what we're going to do.
Do you think this will be a good thing for ratepayers because of the extra help that will be put behind investigations? Because, I mean, a lot of local authorities aren't like government departments. They don't have all the staff to do thorough investigations.
Yeah, there'll be a learning curve for everybody involved. So every year the ombudsman lays a report before Tim Wood about his or her work. We've had two now. The second one was published in July, Tim Wood, and that said that there are issues with the complaints processes, even in government departments. There are also issues in terms of the lack of knowledge about what the ombudsman could investigate and what they couldn't investigate, so lots of issues were outside the jurisdiction of the ombudsman. But ultimately, two cases have actually led to recommendations for government to departments to change things, and it'll be the same in the local authority world. So yes, I think it will ultimately lead to better value for ratepayers, because if you're doing something badly or wrongly, it should help the ratepayers if you do it correctly.
Do you reckon it might also have the unintended or intended consequence of pushing a local authority transition agenda through? Because, like you said, more rural authorities, perhaps with a part-time clerks, etc., might have the infrastructure in place to work in this more modern way.
Yeah, all these things, freedom of information, data protection, having an ombudsman, having an oversight of the complaints process and public administration, they're all adding to the pressures of being a commissioner. And yeah, I would hope the commissioners would think very carefully about how to organise in this world in the light of those things.
One quote from the current Tim Wood Commissioner for Administration is, she was perhaps questioning whether the vulnerable people have access to or understand what it is she can offer. So is that a concern? Do you think more needs to be done to educate people and say, you know, you've got this available to you?
I think what Mrs. Main Thompson was saying was that the people who've engaged with the ombudsman today are the seasoned complainers and the seasoned campaigners. They're looking at planning decisions. I think what she said in her report was that she was surprised that regular people hadn't come forward with issues in housing and in social security, for instance. And yeah, she's got a good point there. There are people who already know about the service, but not everybody. So I think it is for Tim Wood to actually make sure that the public understands better what they can go to the Ombudsman for.
Do you think in the future the powers could be extended or changed in any way to make the service more wider in what it can investigate?
I don't think so. I think we've got a pretty normal specification of the scope of the role of the Ombudsman. I think we still need to do two things. Firstly, we need to extend it to statutory boards and local authorities, and I wanted to lay that down in one order, so that's what this consultation is about. And I guess the second thing is, at the moment, we have parallel processes in things like health and social care, and I guess at a certain point that could come together with the Tim Ward Commissioner for Administration as well. But look, in the past, the tradition in the Isle of Man was to go to your MHK to get things sorted. That's not how it works in many places, and as much as once you've got an ombudsman, you can actually get public administration dealt with through the ombudsman process, leaving MHKs as often as possible to do political things, to make sure things are working in a political way. It's about the separation of responsibilities. It's about the professionalisation of the handling of complaints. I think the ombudsman pilot was a success. It showed it was necessary. This is a useful extension of the role because it's taking it to local authorities, which I think, in actual truth be known, was where the concerns first started.
Does the ombudsman have the power to investigate investigations that have been deemed not satisfactory?
Yeah, if the complaint hasn't been carried out properly, that's valid grounds. Complaints within a certain field, it's also complaints since a certain time. There are constraints. As you say, it's about education so that people, complainants, potential complainants, understand what they can and can't do. I just think it would be so valuable if every commissioner, council around the island had a complaints process that was used properly. And on top of that, just to make sure things are working smoothly, we actually have an independent ombudsman service.
That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast via the Manx Radio website or via Spotify. But for now, go Ramayu and goodbye.